from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
People That's how with, it basically works.
People with hearing aids and all this other kind of stuff, you guys are cheaters, man. Come on.
Well, truth be told, you've been a cheater since birth, because didn't they have to, like, cut you out of your mom's belly to make sure you didn't die?
Yeah, that's right. It turns out that my mom had this sort of rare condition. I don't know what it's called offhand, but basically what happens is that your blood mixes and it's a really bad thing. So they had to induce labor, and I was premature, like, 3 weeks or something.
Mm.
But I was fucking huge baby, man. Premature 3 weeks and I was 9 pounds.
Damn. I was also a science baby. I had the cord wrapped around my neck. They had to cut my mommy open and get me out.
So if anybody wants to kind of figure out why are these heathen atheists allowed to even open their filthy mouths, thanks science. God tried to kill us in different ways, but science saved us, and now we're here to preach the godless gospel.
Well, one of the things I actually wanted to look into sometime is basically the history of the C-section, because that was a big thing back in the day. You know, I'm talking about like back in the Middle Ages and stuff, the whole idea that everybody had the theory that you should be able to cut somebody open and pull this baby out, and that shouldn't be a problem, but no one could pull it off. And I really want to find out which country was doing it first, because I got a feeling it was the Ottoman Empire people who were doing it first.
I don't know, but there are some I think the Buddha is said to have been born from a slit in his mother's side. Like, you'll notice that all religions, or a majority of religions, have a huge aversion to the female birth canal, man. If you come out of the vagina, maybe it looks awful. I don't know. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. But apparently all male authors through time have basically all agreed that you should not be born of a vagina or sex, because it's bad.
Mm.
It's beastly, almost. It's disgusting. I've seen other animals do that. It makes us maybe feel like we're just kind of no different than the calves or the, you know, baby goats. What are baby goats called again?
Fawns?
Billies?
Billy, there you go. But I always thought animals had a fucking good deal with it, you know? They just, you know, the cow just stands there and the baby falls out. And for a gigantic baby, that's pretty amazing.
Well, think about a giraffe, man. Baby's got to fall, like, from pretty high up, man. And it's one of those, it's actually, I think crack.com had this as a sort of like one of the seven worst evolutionary, you know, pitfalls, saying like, well, the giraffe has that whole height advantage, but there are accidents.
Well, I'd be surprised if the giraffe didn't actually lie down on its side at birth. It doesn't. It actually does not. Wow.
It keeps standing up, because why should it do otherwise? Doesn't understand those kinds of things. If I lower, it won't die. No. That's not, that level of thought's not happening.
I don't know. Evolution just tends to have that kind of thing where it's like, give birth, legs give out, and, you know, the natural pushing thing that makes all women poo themselves when they give birth. Yes, ladies, you will poo yourself.
Most four-legged animals choose to always remain standing up, because you don't have time in brutal nature to be lying the fuck down. The baby comes out, and if you got to run, man, you're fucking birthing on the run.
Man.
You're going to pop out, and this thing's just going to go, because that's probably happened. Hell, if I was a fucking predator, I'd be waiting for those females to give birth, because A, either you'll get them both and you get a fucking double score, or two, you get one of like a fetus-sized chicken nugget you get to eat at the end.
Don't forget, it's basically a trio with that placenta on the side.
Oh yeah, I mean, it is a fucking feast and a half watching a female having birth. So I'm telling you this right now, you do it standing up, dog. You do it standing up.
Well, this is about the grossest start to an episode I think ever.
I think I want to vomit. I'm going to puke in my own mouth. Nature is pretty gross. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like we were watching a movie last night, Miss March. Right?
Yeah.
Was that what the name?
Yeah, it's the movie by the guys that did Whitest Kids You Know, which is like a skit comedy troupe that I wholly recommend checking
out. Season 1 and 2, fucking check it out.
Yeah.
With that said, now, I was a little bit disappointed from the movie, but that's a whole other conversation. But it reminded me of something, that when we were kids, man, holy shit, there's a scene where the guy, basically the main character, is showing slides to kids of fucking venereal diseases and all this other kind of stuff, and doing the basic abstinence. The abstinence course. And I didn't even realize that they were doing that to some degree with me back in the day, especially with regards to pictures of maimed genitalia due to sex.
Man, I've always hated that shit because let me tell you what, it's not only useless and gross and disgusting, revolting, it's dangerous because I grew up thinking that an STD, it's like...
Would look like that. It was
exactly
a telltale sign.
It's like, okay, you get someone's pants off and you look at their dick and if it's not fucking overflow, like, if it doesn't look like the elephant man down there, then you're fine because that's the pictures that they showed us. They never taught us anything about those under the radar, you know, sniff test ones or anything like that.
It was, I mean, it's such an obvious scare tactic, but the truth is the truth is a lot scarier than those images. The truth of saying, well, you're not going to be able to tell is a fucking better truth because I'm not supposing that a person should be afraid of sex, but we are not naturally a very careful species, okay? So to some degree, we have to kind of bring it home. We do have number blindness when you think about it because, you know, originally the big push towards condom was for the purpose of not having kids, you know, this pre-pill, you know, the condom's been around for a long fucking time. It used to be made out of sheep guts and stuff like that. People figured it out, all right? They had it figured out when it comes to condoms. Mm-hmm. Fuck, I think Egyptian condoms were made of ceramic. So I don't know how you're supposed to get any pleasure from fucking a ceramic, you know, dildo, but whatever. That's neither here nor there.
I don't know, but look at it like this. You can buy a Fleshlight, right?
Yeah.
So if you could buy a Fleshlight, in theory, couldn't you stick the Fleshlight? Anyway.
I suppose if you filled that tube full of goo or something and you were just having sex with pressure.
Exactly. And basically everybody's really technically masturbating, but that's okay because no STDs are passing around.
There you go. It's all good. You get to do it with somebody else, and at the end of the day, that's what matters. Mm. But, yeah, you know, all of a sudden, pill comes around, so condom use kind of dips a little bit, which is a bad thing because now the real concern, like the real thing that you got to focus on, obviously, is the fact that you can get incurable fucking diseases on your dick.
Yeah, and the next generation of people, honestly, they have kind of swung the other way, and a lot of them don't seem to care all that much. It's like STDs, maybe this is just the way of the future, or maybe it's these kids having some really dangerous thinking, but it's like way of the future. I swear to God, this is my personal experience hanging out with younger kids, is that they're just like, it's, you're going to get one, and that's just the way it is, and you might as well just prepare and be ready to deal with it.
Shut your mouth.
I swear to God.
That's the perception.
The attitude
it's gone the other side, man.
Genital warts is no big deal, apparently. That's the attitude. I'm like, man, that shit makes you barren.
Yeah, that really is what it does.
Yep.
I know so many women that have had to have sort of like those cysts burned off and that kind of stuff, and just like, holy moly.
Because they have genital warts?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just going
because
around.
They've had it, and you know, what can you do? It's just, that is the reality of it. Unfortunately, fuck, we got to work on that, you know? We seriously have to work on it. But at the end of the day, it really, I guess the whole scene in the movie just made me think about sexual education in general.
Mm-hmm.
And also how, you know, if you look at the United States as, you know, and go along its meridians, or if you go down, say, okay, well, I'm going to go south of this border or south of that, you'll notice that the further down you go, the crazier the rates are in terms of teen pregnancies, STDs, and these are also the same areas that, you know, you find that religiosity is really impactful. I mean, not exactly a very big surprise to anybody. I still find it funny that we have to draw those corollaries, you know, like still point to the fact that, you know, if you're more religious, you're more likely to have an abortion, to commit a crime, to do all kinds of things.
How long is it going to take for somebody to come out and just straight up say, and it's been said a million times, it's been whispered a million times, it's in a bunch of articles, just the fact that the better your sex education is, the less pregnant and disease-ridden your fucking kids are going to end up. And I just don't understand why we are even still talking about the idea of teaching kids stuff like abstinence.
I think it's a weird feedback loop. Because if you think about it, the whole idea of what, you know, why the condom would be immoral is again, that really simplistic and stupid story of, you know, God killing a guy for spilling his seed on the ground.
Instead of in his brother's
wife. Yeah. Well, his deceased brother's wife.
Well, that makes it okay.
So, you know, God wanted the line to continue, that he failed, so God killed him, therefore proving, huh? That's not my point.
Proving
proving that God can do whatever the fuck God wants.
And some weird precedent is set because of it.
Yeah, and that's it. You see this all the time, man. And it, all of a sudden, everybody, when it's a choice of do you do it or do you not do it, you know, so either one's going to take. So, you know, it could have easily gone that people would have ignored that passage of the Bible because people ignore all kinds of passages in the Bible. It's just the one that people sort of like found and it got a narrative. Everybody started talking about it to a point where no one was even asking, does that even fucking make any sense?
Well, let's be honest here. How many times do you think people have gone back, have decided, okay, you can't do this, and then gone back and tried to justify it in the Bible rather than reading the Bible and saying, okay, this obviously means that we can't do that. You know, I honestly think that a lot of the whole don't use condom stuff, they just don't. I don't understand quite why they don't like it. Is it? But just the church.
It's the be fruitful and multiply part of the Bible, basically. They're like, you're not doing your part to be to multiply.
But that's retarded. That's absolutely retarded.
But imagine, okay, I imagine that actually there is one good thing about that idea. And imagine back in the day where you have no fucking concept of science and people around you are dying, okay? Just take the Black Death. Kills a third of the European population. All right, just booms, wipe them out. And it's a fucking slow, painful affair. Mm. All right? It's just, you know, you don't go quietly into the night, man. It is long. It takes a long time. So it's horrific. But how are you supposed to deal with wars, with, you know, all kinds of problems? If your population is constantly dying, I mean, you got to keep these people breeding. And remember, at the time, if you had just six kids, which would not be rare, you know that at least one of them was going to die. That was the mortality rate until the 1920s or 30s or something. Mm-hmm. Like we're talking, it's a fairly recent phenomenon that the child mortality rate is as low as it is right now. This is a historically unprecedented moment in mankind's very brief history. So, you know, we just take that shit for granted. We take it for granted that things like, you know, the measles don't kill people. The measles were killing people in the 1960s. They were killing babies. Like Roald Dahl's kid died in the night, I think it was 1969, of measles. Hearing that now, you'd be like shaking your head saying, what happened? Well, you know, you can't take that for granted. So I can understand, obviously, the be fruitful and multiply because you just need to get people to start fucking.
Yeah, at a certain time, it was kind of one of those for the betterment of the species.
Well, I don't even say that. I mean, you got a really simple logic in your mind. You're a church. You need more followers because they fill your coffers. What else do you need to do? You need more people.
It makes sense. How do you get more customers? Breed, people, breed.
Exactly, because, you know, you got them right at the beginning. They come to you. And, okay, here's the thing. I don't want to actually, just on a tangent here, I don't want to go around saying that churches didn't provide any service. Because one of the things that I realized, and this is very interesting, is that with the idea of confession in particular, is that the priest becomes kind of like the person that everybody goes to explain the problems of what they've done. And in a sense, that person, sort of in light of all this honesty from everybody else, can play a role in making sure that everybody's sort of like getting along. Sort of a person saying like, okay, well, so this person or that person cheated with them, and if there's some kind of like issue or conflict, it can be understood and resolved at least to that degree.
Man.
In the ideal situation. And that's what I want to stress here. This is assuming that, of course, the priest behind it has everybody's best interests at heart. Why am I supposed to believe that that is necessarily true of human beings? When given a lot of power, what do people normally do? Abuse it. And, you know, if you feel that you are basically, godly inspired, or if the Lord himself has given you that power, I mean, what more sense of entitlement do you need, honestly? And given the fact that no one will ever say shit about you even being wrong, I mean, forget hubris. This extends far beyond the mere concept. Hmm. So that's that other flip side, you know? Obviously, the abuses of powers are always too fucking present and attractive to people. They just want it. They just do it. You know, this reminds me, in New York, they have there's a lobby group, a Catholic lobby group that's trying to kill an act that's being passed that would extend the statute of limitations on child abuse. They're fighting this.
Wow.
And really, all the amendment does is it adds to the current law and says, okay, well, there's 5 years added to the statutes, you know, obviously because people realize it takes a long time for people to be able to do that.
For people to grow up to an age where they finally feel comfortable emotionally enough with themselves to be able to deal with the situation.
And even in then, the statute is not an unlimited. So, you know, they're pushing on that boundary, but the Catholic, this Catholic lobby group is basically saying, well, you know, we're going to go bankrupt paying all these settlements and so on and so forth. They've even convinced their own flock to sort of take their side so bad that in some rallies they were throwing stones and other objects at the victims, you know, accusing
really?
Them of trying to take money from the church.
Significant number or just like an isolated incident? What's the deal here? Because that's a pretty fucking outrageous thing to do.
Well, okay, the way that the Christian church is painting, or the Catholic church is painting this, is obviously from that perspective of if they do this, we're going to be bankrupt and we're not going to be able to have any of our services.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the fucking leverage they have, right? They're like, look at all these services that we provide. And, you know, these people are trying to take money for things that we as a church didn't do, but an isolated person. Can you see the justification
that
would have
in
their mind?
It's interesting because, to me, I imagine that the people involved with these cases, I'm not saying that a lot of them wouldn't want the money as well. Because, hey, if I got raped, I'd want the fucker in jail and I'd want money from the organization that set it up. But I'm not seeing any criminal trials going on here. You know what I mean? I don't get why that's what they're concerned about rather than rooting out the core problem. But of course, that's just me.
Well, you know, it seems to me that it's not as easy as it looks to actually convict someone of molestation charges. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of prosecutors that don't do it just simply because proof would it wouldn't pass the merits of proof, which is why all these settlements come out basically because these priests are like, well, we can't, they're not going to win in court, but they would win in the court of public opinion, which is where money is usually, when it's a civil suit where you're like, I'm going to sue this motherfucker. People will, you know, sort of like have a larger lenience of evidence. They'll be like, yes, there was impropriety. What the hell was going on? We listened to this person. Their pain seemed genuine, and that's all they need to know, and that's it.
Yeah, because when you think about it, like, this here is a pretty hard crime to prove. There's no property that you can catch on the person. There's no body to be disposed of. There's no messy blood stain. Well, I guess hopefully there are not any messy.
Well, a lot of these, most of the time, these things happen a long time, you know, decades after the crime's been committed. So what the hell are you supposed to do? I mean, it's relying on memories. And, you know, I won't even deny the fact that there are probably, you know, it's statistically inevitable that someone may remember abuse even when abuse didn't exist. So there's obviously going to be the flip side where some innocent fucking priest gets accused and memories are made up. This stuff happened all the time in the 80s for lots of different stuff, you know, back when we really didn't understand the concept of implanted memories.
Well, remember
and that kind of stuff.
The satanic cult craze?
Yeah, exactly. That's entirely caused by that phenomenon of psychiatrists basically implanting false memories in people and essentially individuals having their lives destroyed because of some faulty memories.
Because they were Satanists.
And, you know, one of the things that we're beginning to realize is that, you know, the reliability of human testimony is very low, very, very low. So that makes things very difficult to prove in a criminal case. If you're wondering why these motherfuckers aren't in jail, that's the reason. But at the same time, we all know what's happening. And that's why civil suits are just exploding. You know, because everybody's realizing, yeah, they're doing this. I mean, this is not people that are lying here. These are not individuals with implanted memories. These are individuals with serious issues. And really, the evidence out there is from the church itself, which is why they don't release any records. They sort of like have privilege because, you know, either any evidence that they gather, they can always claim sort of like they have a legal loopholes. Like, well, anything that's confessed to you, you know, you can't subpoena that shit.
I can understand why that would be the case.
Yeah, you know what? From a legal standpoint, it's the same reason why, you know, with your lawyer, your doctor, there are just certain things that, you know, they may be discriminatory, extremely, but they're just things that you said. I mean, and there's something, they're probably even a very inconsistent memory on the part of the person who's saying it. Again, more problems of testimony, which is why they're bullshit. But, you know, again, that's that fucking issue. But to remove or to fight against this kind of act, I mean, unbelievable. Like, just the brass balls on these people. I'm supposed to believe here that this is an institution that is,
working hard to get rid of this problem. Well, yeah. They're working hard to get rid of a problem, but it's not the same problem as everyone else.
They've been working a very long time masking that problem.
They want these lawsuits to stop, and that might sound good at first, but not the way they're doing it.
That's pretty much the end of that conversation right there. It's like, But what about the abused? We just want it to stop in terms of us paying cash because we're going broke. I mean, no one sees their books, they don't make their books open. So if they want to prove that they're going broke, I will gladly look at their fucking business ledger. Okay, how much money, what are your assets? What is your revenue? Let's take a look here. Are you really going broke?
I would really love to know how the business model or the business end of a lot of different religions run, because I mean, my mom, once again, her church, it's not a welfare church by any means, but they are penny pinchers to the extreme, and the priest doesn't make a lot of money, and the everybody's volunteering, and it's all very
broke ass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's how it's been for her last like three churches. Now, obviously, going down to the south, you see these mega churches that obviously are not hurting. But I'm just wondering, Catholic churches, how are they doing? Where does it stand, and how do they divide? It's all a very interesting thing that I would love somebody to just open up the books and say, here's how the financials work. Wouldn't it be sweet to see all that?
You can see those financials. Usually you'll see them from evangelical ministers that get outed or basically that the IRS or whoever else starts indicting.
Yeah, but do you think it's...
similar to than those? I think that the model is just almost universally the same. It's not really very complicated, okay? Because you look at most of the churches, and one of the ways that say look at in the Middle East... Churches are the only real, or mosques are the only real place where you can put your money where it's going to be safe and not be stolen by some crazy, bank owner that's a brother of a government dude, just some really corrupt stuff. For the most part, most of these religions are pretty well organized because, they realize that that is an essential service. But they still make money from it. They're a bank, they'll charge interest and service fees and that kind of stuff. And it's a brilliant system. And I mean, it's what made, the Catholic Church and all these other churches so rich. It was just basically from having the common economic sense that they've had for the longest time, I guess.
Well, that's when you have a lot of money and you have, that gives you the ability to do a lot of really interesting things.
So. Yeah, and the fact that money is not taxed or anything else like that. I mean, consider how much money that you made in your salary before when you were working for the man.
Mm-hmm.
How much of it would be taxed, my friend?
Oh, a good 30% to 45%.
It makes a difference at the end of the year where you look at how much money you actually brought home and you're saying, fuck, I make apparently $40,000 a year, but I bring home like less than 20.
Oh, I got so angry when I was making $1,500 a paycheck and I still wasn't breaking $1,000 after tax. I was like, I'm so low down here. You're taking so much.
Well, the poor are usually the ones that pay the most taxes. It's always what it is. I mean, it's disproportionate. Obviously, it's going to be. The rich don't want to pay any taxes. So in order to be able to have essential services, lots of poor people have to give lots of money.
Yep, the rich figure out smart ways to not pay taxes or pay lower taxes. Like my brother was just here yesterday. We had a wonderful discussion with him about how to basically not pay very much in taxes through all sorts of neat ways because he's an accountant.
Well, the loopholes are available. I mean, if you want to do the research and, you can probably find some pretty epically awesome tricks. But, it does seem pretty insane that this is how we moderate it. Sort of like, oh, okay, well, you can take advantage only if you know the right things. And if you don't, you get severely punished and fucked over.
I know. It drives me fucking nuts. Every single time there's a new thing that's added. Say, there was something that was added in Canada where if you ride the bus or the metro...
You could save the receipts.
You could save the... You basically have to save all your bus passes and mail them in and then get your thing back. And obviously, I understand that you need the paperwork to do it, but this wasn't announced anywhere. It's not included in any kind of area. They are literally secrets that the government doesn't really want you to know about, because if everybody took advantage of them, the province would be broke. So they don't fucking advertise these things.
They're only meant to placate hard asses that really care about that stuff, and the rest of us are just like, too busy! It's like so many things, but at the end of the day, I just think it's... It is a bit unfortunate, really, that you have to do that much research or to know the right people to kind of get the comparable service that you should otherwise be getting. I'm like, it is stupid that we pay such a huge portion. Okay, I want to tangent onto something actually from what we were talking about before with the financial institution. That's about a documentary I put up on Benny Hinn. I don't know if you remember Benny Hinn. He's like one of those faith healer dudes. Basically, this guy right now is like, he's so rich. It's ridiculous. They have their own private jet. I think his house is worth like $10 million. And they were just kind of like, it was the documentary or whatever, the journal. What do they call it whenever they do one of those pieces like the 60 Minutes used to do? What do they call?
Segments. Exposés.
Exposés. Yes, thank you. Their expose on him. So they're basically going, look at these hotel rooms that he's been staying at. Like they're $4,000. They're like $2,000. But he doesn't submit any taxes. The ministry says it's all expenses and that kind of stuff. And you know, some really shady stuff, man. Like it would make anybody, even all those jackass is like a Bernie Mac feel embarrassed at how poorly it's hidden, you know, but these are not exactly captains of industry here. They're just people who just are good at counting money and getting people to fall over when they put their hands on their foreheads, you know, not exactly super geniuses here, but they're very, you know, they're very unscrupulous. They seem to have no problem convincing people that they have, you know, powers. And at the same time, offering them probably a lot more than false hope. And I don't know if you're aware of this. I go to this site called whatstheharm.org. It's a really interesting site where you can just... .net, I think. Anyways.
Always the confusing. Why aren't you people .coms, goddammit?
Because the .coms are taken by bullshit fucking sites that just sit there and do nothing but generate some bogus ad revenue for a piece of shit asshole. Anyways, that's a different conversation altogether. Where was I?
We were talking about Benny.
Oh, yes. Okay, so Benny basically, if you want to go on the site, sort of check it out, you'll like it. But Benny reminds me pretty much of Peter Popov in the 1980s and his whole scam. And he'd have a little thing in his ear and he'd basically be able to... his wife was reading prayer cards from people, so he was able to recite names and exactly what people's conditions are. But he'd say it in a creative way, obviously. He'd be like, oh, I can feel you, the blood clots in your brain, and they are dissipating as we speak. The Lord has given me that power. And then all of a sudden, I'm paraphrasing here, but he'd take his hand and all of a sudden, you know, lay it on somebody like, hallelujah, you know, like the dramatic scream and the blah, 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 blah.
He was basically the stereotype that everybody kind of imagines of those huckster faith healers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very energetic, very weird voice, hunched over. Kind of looked like Mr. Burns, actually, a younger version of Mr. Burns. That's the best way I could describe it. So he got exposed hardcore by James Randi on the Johnny Carson show, actually, because James Randi...
Man, who goes on the Johnny Carson show? How many times did Johnny Carson set people up?
A lot. He set up
Uri Geller.
Uri Geller, yeah.
That was the whole thing.
Back when
a
late night talk show was actually part of the skeptic movement.
That's the whole thing, man. You gotta avoid that. If James Randi is on the Tonight Show with you, don't go on. It's a trap.
Most of those people, they figured, I'm just going to go and I'm going to prove James Randi wrong. What? A person has a delusion? What a surprise. No one ever lives in a bubble of delusion.
So you don't think it was like Oprah Winfrey with that James Frey, like an out of the boom, bam.
You know what? If anything, Johnny was always really cool about that whole stuff. He's like, well, I brought some materials that you normally do in your act, Uri Geller, for instance. And he's like, do you mind doing your act? It's a fucking fair question. The guy's over at your show and you're like, can you do this act?
I don't know. It's kind of like saying, hey, David Copperfield, here's a hat and here's a bunny.
Yeah, but David Copperfield doesn't pretend that he has psychic powers. David Copperfield admits that he's a magician. And, of course, that would be disrespectful to do to a magician. Okay. But a man with psychic powers who claims to be able to do it whenever, wherever, and who says it is not a trick, well, you're like, I set it up really nicely so you could prove to everyone that it is not a trick indeed. And... be the superstar that you claim to be.
Yeah, yeah. No, you got me. I'm on your side now.
It just seems unfair because you're like, well, that guy, he's not real and he's going to be disappointed. you know, if he hadn't been, then we would have be having a very different conversation.
I just hate setups. I honestly do. It's just, in general, it really, I mean, I can't even watch that.
Oh, you can't,
even
you can't have gotcha questions?
And the gotcha questions are whatever. Like, but I can't even watch To Catch a Predator. I feel bad for the child molesters.
Yeah, you would.
Those
sick
poor
bastard.
Bastards were just talking to somebody on IRC, and next thing they know, they're on Dateline. Can I happen to anybody?
I know I love talking to
people. That's my whole thing. I have a hard time fucking getting past the setup point. I'm just like, he got tricked. And I'm like, anybody could get tricked. I'm very worried about that. Not so much
all right, I
think the pedophile.
Well, there's a difference between sort of like a pedophile setup and that Uri Geller setup.
I agree 100%. I was just showing you how far down the fucking, how uncomfortable I am with setups, is that I find those things kind of odious as well. It's like, congrats for catching a pedophile, but I don't want to watch it fucking happen. It's just uncomfortable and weird.
Well, do I really want to watch a man's life be destroyed in front of my very eyes? Not really. I mean, it disgusts me.
I know.
The entire process disgusts me. Can these people not handle it on their own? Whatever you got to do, flog him or something, please don't involve me. I really don't want to have to think about that
Exactly. And that's my whole thing with, like, the Uri Geller thing. I mean, I've seen the clips floating around. I never wanted to watch him because I'm just like, I don't want, you know, Uri Geller might be a scumbag. I don't want to see him fucking have one of those brutal Wonder Years embarrassing moments. You
but
know?
Again, you know, you put yourself in those kinds of situations, you make those declarations, it's only fair. It's also why it was so great whenever... He had this other show that he was trying to find his next apprentice or something like that. But obviously not an apprentice of magic, but an apprentice of psychic power. And and it was really funny because, again, James Ranney exposed him as for his really cheap trick. His cheap trick is essentially moving a compass, you know, like just by force of sheer will. It'll move a little bit. But obviously he's got a magnet on his thumb and he gets it close to the compass. And it's a really simple trick.
Yeah.
It just has to be pulled with a lot of convincing gusto, which is the only thing Uri Geller can do well, because the thing about his other tricks is he does them terribly. That if you really are good at what you do, you look at Uri Geller and you're like, you are a third-rate magician, sir. You can't even do that key-bending trick really well, or the spoon one, and that's your big one.
Yeah, but that's an important life lesson for everybody listening right now to understand, is it doesn't matter how good you are.
You just have to do it.
Being a better marketer is the key fucking thing. If there's somebody that does something really good and you're like, I would steal that, but they're better than me, don't worry, if you can market it better, steal it.
Wait, you're giving advice to people who could do our shtick?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-oh. Well, at least we'll be recognized in the wiki as the original one that it was stolen from.
No, we won't. You think what was it, Marconi? Was it Marconi that
he's mentioned in the wiki?
Yeah, I guess he's well, you know what, that's a pretty fucking famous thing. What's our shtick? Rambling about atheism?
Well, I'm assuming if somebody sort of takes this idea and flies with it and becomes really successful, you know, ergo, you become that distant legend of the originals.
Don't worry about it, Jake. They can't bottle our magic.
No, they can't. We're magically delicious.
Well.
Okay. You made me go on a tangent there about Benny Hinn. The thing that I wanted to basically say, and this tied again back to the fact that we're saying, wouldn't it be great to see their books? Is I'm sure Benny Hinn's books are really, really quite simple. Money flows in. They purchase all kinds of assets. They do what normal rich people do. And they do, again, what normal rich people do, is to siphon that money for their own sake and their own luxuries. And it is unsurprisingly grotesque.
Yeah, but I just want to know, like, even if you just break it down to the general percentage of how much money goes in towards, you know, the executive level of the church, and how much money gets paid out to various charities, and how much goes into a bank, which then, you know, the bank will use that money to fund various questionable financial things that damage the world. Remember when it turned out that Bill Gates basically had all these things under his portfolio that were killing the earth, and he ended up cutting a whole bunch out? I just want to know what the Catholic Church has. And all the other churches.
Its portfolio?
Yeah.
Probably some pretty scary stuff.
Some mighty stuff.
Yeah, we would probably look at it, and who knows what kind of insane documents we might uncover. I mean, consider the fact that the Vatican apologized to the Jews about the whole Nazi thing because of their compliance during World War II. that's them being either exposed from whatever pittance and pitiful documents somebody had lying around. But in the true Vatican coffers, the fucking what is hidden in there? What insane treasures are they? Have they not told us about in terms of sort of, you know, documentation of history or their own complicity in things? Because you know that even within their memberships, there are people that disagree with what the institution is doing. Hello, I mean, not everybody follows suit. So I would be just curious because the Catholic Church does not have a habit of destroying things. Rather, it has a habit of concealing them because it secretly is fascinated by that stuff. You know, back in the old days, the first Christians, yeah, they fucking destroyed everything.
Burn it all.
But then all of a sudden there was kind of a resurgence in the Middle Ages where they're like, you know what, let's keep it hidden instead. It's better. We can study it because there was a real effort within the very religion to start asking tough theological questions because they thought that was the newest thing.
Man, who was the Obama at the head of everything then?
I don't know. Maybe Thomas Aquinas?
That might be too kind to Obama. Get on the gay issue, Obama.
Get on the gay issue. Yeah. Well, if you want to make a legacy, get on an issue that will pretty much be the next issue for 20, 30 years. You know, then you'll be like the Martin Luther King of your time.
God, I hope it doesn't take 20 or 30 years.
Probably still, man. Mm. I mean, think about that old generation that just won't go away, won't die. Mm. They just will. We keep them alive with all kinds of drugs, and we're probably going to go broke. Mm.
So do you want to talk about Buddhism this episode, or do you want to talk about that next
show? You know what? We're going to talk about that next episode. It just turns out that the show just casually rolled along.
Mm-hmm.
Rolled along. We got lots covered that I didn't even think we'd cover. I was worried. Sometimes I worry. I'm like, do we not have enough things to talk about with religion?
It really depends on how peppy I am as far as being able to keep you going. You know, you're like a ping pong master and I'm kind of like a ping pong retard. And I have to kind of try and hit it back.
Swat it back.
Yeah, exactly. Try to keep the game going.
I like it. It's now I understand your usefulness so much more clearly now.
Yep. You probably have a better time just playing against the wall. But, this is a bit of variety and it keeps you from getting a little bit too crazy.
That's true. I would probably get pretty crazy. All right. I guess we're going to catch everybody next Tuesday for the bonus podcast. Now, if you are not yet a member and you love the show, let me ask you, why don't you consider becoming a patron? It's $20 a year. You gain access to all of our catalog of bonus shows, now 21 of them. So that's something getting close to about 8.5 hours of just bonus shows if you love it. And then you'll also gain access to the next year's worth of show. That's a show a week. That's 50 shows, people, at least, because I'm assuming we're going to take some time off, damn it.
Yeah, plus you get the good feelings in your groin knowing that you've helped these atheist people continue to spew their atheist nonsense.
Yeah, and you know what? There are even some people that decide to give more. We even have an option that says, you know, if you want to donate more, you can donate more because we exist on patronage. And it's all good like that. We like it like that.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to see it succeed, and we think that this is actually kind of the future of the interwebs. People, like, forget about this whole bullshit of having to, you know, get a channel in which you like two shows and the rest of it is just junk.
Or having to wait until Pizza Hut decides that we're a demographic they want to advertise to.
Oh, man. Pizza Hut presents The Good Atheist. Ooh, I feel
good
all wrong about it.
Good Atheist Pizza Podcast. I like it.
We'll make our own pizza pie. All
you
right.
Know, their calzones aren't bad, though. I'm just going to say that.